Hey, producers, fun episode. We've got John from his shop, The Graphic Hive, in South Williamsport, Pennsylvania. He's got a really cool story. Owns his four-floor building. Three floors are his shop, a couple of the tenants. He's doing a ton of automation. He's been able to do more with less people, which I think is a dream of a lot of us, is how do you be able to get efficient and get more profitable? What do you buy? What tooling do you get? Front of office stuff, production stuff. We're diving down into it, and he's sharing a lot.
All right. We've got some sponsors, though, that make this podcast possible. We'll kick it off with Multicraft. You have all heard of Multicraft underscore daddy and his terribly amazing Instagram videos. If you need ink supplies or a daddy, Multicraft screen printing and digital supplies for over 50 years has been providing you with top brands at competitive prices. You can mention the Printavo Pod, receive 10% off your first order, and Dave gives away a free case of PMI tape for every episode. All you have to do is DM him, and he'll pick a new winner every week. We love Dave. He listens to our episodes. He actually listened to our last episode and installed some AI tooling that we had talked about. So Dave, thank you. We love you.
That's so cool. All right, guys, if you want $250, Easy Way is doing a giveaway every single month off this podcast, which is so cool. Go to easyway.com/giveaway and put in your info. Then that enters you to get $250 in product credits. They're doing it every single month, though. So that is really, really cool. Easy Way, they're making reclaiming screens a whole lot easier with their systems, chemicals, and equipment. Plus, they've got some incredible people that can be able to help you and problem solve. And I know, Steven, you shared me some really cool educational stuff that they've got on their website too. So easyway.com/giveaway. Put in your info.
All right. Are you ready to take your custom apparel to the next level? Stahls is the leader in heat printing solutions. Whether you're a small business just starting out or an established brand that's scaling, Stahls makes the hustle easy. They're here so you can simply heat press and profit. Get the equipment, transfers, and support your business needs to start smart and stay ahead. We use them for a lot of like patches, a lot of their 3D stuff. They're always coming out with new and improved ways to heat press. So visit stahls.com today. You can save 20% off your next DTF transfer order using the code HUSTLER20. Thanks so much, Stahls.
And we'll be at Stahls' facility in Michigan next week, Detroit suburbs or something. So maybe we should do a pod from there or something. We'll do one after it. Anyway, that'll be pretty exciting. GraphX Source. If you need a solution to improve efficiency and reduce costs in your art department, GraphX offers industry-leading outsourcing options. Campus Inc. runs some number of artists there. I don't know the exact number. Nick's going to text me after, I'm sure. Handling SEPs, mockups, creative work, digitizing, and a lot of back office admin. They've been doing this for over 40 years. They've been around for quite some time. They've got offices all over the place. Pretty big company. And Steven visited one of their offices recently. That was really cool. Use the code PRINTAVOPOD24. That gets you 50% off your first vector, SEP, or digitized order at graphxsource.com. All right, let's jump on in. John, you said you're exhausted?
No, just printed. Well, I'm on the tail end of 3,008 pieces, front and backs.
3,008, how specific?
Yeah, yeah.
No spoilage?
Lot with holes, but we're dealing with that.
Who's on press for that? Is that you?
It's been primarily me because I lost my head press op, so I've been training somebody. So it's been a huge learning curve for getting back into the swing of things.
With a new press operator that you're coming on board, is there anything that, like, is he just shadowing you or helping, or how are you thinking about the ramp up?
So we've got a lot of documentation in place, and I've been kind of like slowly easing her into things. She's picking up on a lot of it. I think it's just going to be muscle memory until she can be up to speed and, you know, running on her own. So
how long do you think it takes to get a press op going? Like, what would be your expectation? A year?
Yeah. Well, to be good and independent and, you know, go through all the little nuances and issues you could have.
Do you think there's like different skill level of like loader unloader versus like setup and teardown? Like, we consider them all the same role, like when we say the word press op, but have you ever thought of like breaking them into two different roles?
Well, at one point I've had, you know, three people in screen printing, and I've always had struggled with the dynamics of three people working well together, because two people are always talking about the other third person. But you know, like for me, we're in a smaller community. We don't have like that 3008 piece is an anomaly for my shop. I'm used to doing like 50-100 pieces is kind of big for this area. So I struggle with really building a big team for each department.
Is it like Liquid Graphics? There's a shop, a big shop where they have like a pit crew and all they do are setups. And they just go press to press, and they don't like the loader on loaders.
But Josh at Liquid specifically talked about that, where, yeah, it was John. It was like a NASCAR pit crew, like Steven is saying. And
I've seen the drone videos with all the like the 18 autos and pods of three or four, like 18 color presses. It's insane.
So he has, I think it was three presses around each dryer, not all running, two running. One is always being either set up or torn down. So there's that team, set up, tear down team. And then there's the people that are running. And his goal is literally once you start running, once you stop running one job, you hop onto the next press and start running that one, in theory.
Wouldn't we all love that in theory? Now, what we've done is like we have what's called the expediter, and their job is setups. And all they focus on are setups and just like getting screens ready. And so like loaders, unloaders are not, they will do teardowns, but they won't be setting up jobs to try and like split those roles out a little bit. Because to your point, John, like it takes a minute to be able to set up a job properly and run it.
Why do you think, were you, as much as you can say, were you happy that the press app left from before, or was it a sting? I mean, obviously you're running it now, so it's not great, but still sometimes it's like, kind of happy we have someone new here.
Well, I think the big thing is I'm happy for her because it was a career change for her. Like she went to school for accounting, worked for me for like 3-4 years. And she's just like, I want to do something that I went to school for. So I can't blame her for that.
Do you, hindsight looking back, do you wish there was like more cross training in place, or like what you would have done differently knowing that kind of this one employee did all of that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, like, I originally was going to hire two people and train them at the same time, but I just don't know if it's like I guess the best analogy is spinning plates with that. And I want to get this girl up to speed. I might bring a second person on, but I'm also worried about, like, you know, winter's coming around. It'll be January, February, and I don't want to overstaff too. So,
yeah. Do you guys do any like type of cross training at all, or like try to emphasize? I know you guys are into lean and stuff, and we'll probably talk about that, but do you think about cross training at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think we kind of have a bit of the mindset of, you know, help out where help's needed. So if embroidery's busy, you know, we might put people in and show them real quick what's going on. Or I had a person that was doing all my fulfillment for web stores. She was coming down, catching out the back of the dryer. So when it makes sense for the big jobs, I'll try and, you know, bring people in and at least get them acclimated to what's going on.
Yeah. What we have found is when we start cross training, we find that someone might actually be way better at something that they weren't hired for. And so like we had someone just like cutting vinyl and like prepping on the DTF. And then we had her in bag and tag, and it was like night and day. And I was like, whoa, wait a second. Like this employee needs to move over there like tomorrow. I don't know, Bruce, if you've ever had that, even on the Printavo side, like someone tried out success or sales and like, we're like, oh crap, you're much better at this.
We've had trials that didn't go well. So I've been on
trials that didn't go well.
Yeah. And then I'm kind of stuck because it's like, this isn't for you.
Like moving someone and then it didn't go well.
Right. It's not a demotion technically, but it probably feels like one. So like, hey, can you actually go back over there?
We've been a little bit more keen on it lately, where like some employees that have been stuck in the same role and like they start to get a little bit stale. And so we're like, how do we switch it up? It's like, okay, on Monday, everyone's going to do something different just to like keep everyone on their toes.
John, the hire two at once thing is pretty cool. I've tried to do that. Like if budget allows, I've tried to do that for as many like contributor type of roles as possible, like a sales role or like account management type thing. Because one could just be really bad and then I have to start all over, but I trained them both at the same time. And so it's like less work, I think. And B, it allows me to see who actually is excelling more. because there was always someone that's like picking it up quicker, executing on it better, care about it. And maybe they're a little bit competitive too between them, like mentally. It's, you know, of like, ooh, you know, let me call this person, let me call that person, let me do this, let me do that, and go a little bit above and beyond. So it's helped, but you're right. It is like a if budget thing allows. Do you ever try that, Steven, with any roles?
Yeah, like we kind of have, it's a running joke of like, when you're going to hire one, hire two. And you will know very quickly, like who kind of takes off, like a little bit of a horse race, and they just kind of like set the bar. And yeah, if budget allows for it, I see it happening more in like a sales role kind of thing. If you can.
John, is there something you did to get that big order that came in? Since you said you're in a smaller town, this is sort of out of the known.
Well, this is a contract job, so I guess I'm not at liberty to really talk too much about it. So, but
what a great contract printer.
Yeah.
Do you think about like how you can get bigger? Like, is that something you're thinking about pretty regularly of a, how do I get these bigger type of jobs? Or do you just kind of know your niche and your sweet spot?
There's some key accounts I'm trying to, you know, break into. And I feel like some of them I've like exhausted most of the options, and it's just maybe either a wait till whoever's in charge of ordering or something changes roles type situation. But I don't know, or the other printer screws up is my ideal situation.
Yeah, no, we haven't introduced you yet, but you've been at Graphic High 15 years. Is that right?
Yep. 15 years in October. Well, it'll be 16 this coming October.
Wow. In South Williamsport, Pennsylvania, in the Pennsylvania map. Where is that?
Smack dab in the middle. We're only notable for 2 weeks out of the year when Little League's in town. So that was a couple weeks ago.
Interesting. Is that where they have like Little League World Series?
Yep.
Do you guys try to like activate on that or do anything special or?
So the only thing that I've done with Little League, because Little League is so corporate that it's all like Russell Athletics, Reebok, Nike, you know, like you can't touch the uniforms there. But historically, there's like right when Little League comes to town, there's a local parade of all the different businesses. And I probably print 80% of what's in the parade. Because we're not down, like we used to have a shop downtown where the parade happened, and Little League goes nuts for those Little League pins. So you do a business pin and it's kind of like printing money, but because we're off the beaten path now where we're at in Southside, it's not worth my time. But and then the other fun one, it didn't happen this year, but in prior years, whoever was in on the ESPN team would come over and we'd do like a gag shirt every year. So I think the one guy was retiring, so they found his old yearbook photo and we printed like 50 shirts of that. Or I think the year they got the new scoreboard in, the guy was having problems like, you know, the numbers weren't turning over right or something like that. So they took a picture of the scoreboard and had us add like pie and all sorts of weird characters just as like a running joke for whoever's running the scoreboard. So
maybe the Savannah Bananas will come to town one year and turn that place up. Have you guys been watching that?
I see a lot of stuff on Instagram of him and he's like becoming like a business coach now more than anything.
Yeah. I mean, he's just like has his North Stars and is like staying super true to them. And like, he's disrupting baseball quite a bit and like creating new fandom and like there's a whole brand behind it. And so I wonder who prints for them. I feel like they have to sell a lot of merch. If you print for Savannah Bananas legally, let us know.
Well, did you follow the John Oliver thing where he rebranded the Erie Little League team? Or not little, it was a minor league team out in Erie, Pennsylvania. And he basically said, you know, give me free right to do whatever I wanted. And he did some historical research and there's like some moon, it's like the old elephant animal from like prehistoric times, mammoths, like a woolly mammoth. And he rebranded as like the Erie Mammoths or something like that. And they sold way more merch for this one game than they did in like 10 years.
It's insane. Yeah. Wow. I've seen some minor league teams like the Trash Pandas, like they'll do some goofy things, like parody merch and stuff like that. That's nuts.
All right. Real quick break to share something about Graphics Pro Expo that's coming up in Charlotte, November 6th through 8th. We've got a code here to Hustlers. Go to Graphics Pro Expo. Just Google that for free registration if you use that code Hustlers. So kicking off November 4th, there are two brand new workshops, a Stalls Pro Day, which Stahl's a big partner of the pod. Thank you. And Digital Technology Group's How to Scale and Start a Profitable Print Business. So that's going to be great, especially if you're just getting started in your business. So this is at the Graphics Pro University for hands-on sessions. They've got screen printing, embroidery, laser engraving, sand carving, and a bunch more. So don't miss a chance to invest in yourself and your business. Use that code word HUSTLERS to get free registration.
John, you're all about lean. Where would you rank yourself in the like Scott Garnett, like in the lean, you know, like the lean hall of fame, 2 second lean, where do you sit there?
The thing with lean is I always forget to document the before. I'm good at documenting the after. And I think my big thing is the more like, especially with me being in this role, helping out with screen printing, I'm like, you know, running jobs and going, what if I move this or what if I change this or see if there's any kind of efficiency, whether it be, you know, time saving, quality saving, whatever. So I'm just always thinking and like, I'll be on press and I'll pull up my phone and go on Amazon, go, oh, do they have that? Or does this thing even exist? Because I think my biggest thing is creating homes for everything and like little visual cues. So it just becomes more common sense. So, you know, I get a lot of influence from Scott. I get a lot of influence from Corey, up at Floodway. So just trying to follow along with shops and like, you know, if they've got videos of their press running, I'm looking at the background to see like, what is that? How can I do that? Or what might be there to borrow other people's ideas.
When did you jump on the lean bandwagon?
It was after Print Hustlers, 21 in Texas. Saw the talks,
the 2 second lean.
And listen to the audiobook on the flight home.
And so like how all in are you on lean? Like, do you run the like daily meetings and like, or do you do like a lightweight version of it?
It's a lot lightweight. It's very casual. I tried to get everybody on doing the all hands stuff and it kind of became a bit of a time suck. And maybe I was doing it wrong with how I was implementing it, but like one thing, and
explain that meeting too, though, because I forgot. Like, and to say it was a weekly meeting that people bring like
daily stand up
their thoughts and improvements weekly. To.
Yeah, I think there's a format you're supposed to follow where it's like a daily meeting. Like, you know, what issues do you have? What can you improve? I forget what the other segments of it are, but for me, I just do like a weekly check in. Like, hey, daily check in. Hey, what's your plans? Do you have any issues? What's going on? So it's very, you know, lighthearted. 10 minutes, 15 minutes, maybe.
Gotcha. And everyone stops and you're in a circle and doing it.
Well, I do it by department. So, you know, because we have 3 floors of production. So I'll check in with like digital, see how they're doing, or embroidery or screen print. So they're mini meetings.
Do you feel like it's hard to get buy-in on the lean stuff? Or is it just you pushing it kind of everywhere in the business? Or do you have like lean champions?
Primarily it's been me pushing it. But I also feel like we've created Slack channels where it's just like bitch about what you hate or you know, like, you know, it's your complaint area. And I might, if I can address it easily or figure out a way to make it work, I will. And I've also like, I used to be, my employees would joke around. It's like Hurricane John would come in and just change something on a weekend. But I've gotten more like buy-in, like, okay, what if we did this or let's take a look at this area and what can we do here? So it's, they're more supportive and I'm not just moving stuff to move stuff.
Has that been positive? Cause we have another hurricane. We've got Hurricane Farag here too, as well, who has a history of changing things.
I think as long as I'm explaining why we're doing it and I'm not, you know, it's to make things better for you in the long run. And I think the interesting thing with some of the lean stuff we've done, like I can operate a screen, you know, a screen print shop with a staff of one, if I had to, but, and I see like we're doing the same level of work with less people. So.
Isn't it annoying though sometimes when you're like, I just wish one employee would just grab onto this and like take this and run with it and be the circus clown and like not me? I feel like that's my biggest struggle.
Well, I think Gary Vee says it best where if you want someone to give 110%, they should have ownership in the company because you're going to get star players, but they'll give you 80%. Anyone giving you over 100 has some sort of vested interest. So I had a business partner that I gave him 10% ownership because he was like, he helped me at the key time. He went above and beyond for what was going on. And he became my right-hand man. He was very, you know, just adamant in the growth and everything. But he unfortunately passed away of pancreatic cancer in 2022. So that was a big like sucker punch, because it was like him and I gelled well, where I'd do things, and then if I got buried, he'd pick up where I left off, and you know, and he was just very customer focused. And I've had a hard time trying to find someone with even like 50% of his skills and capability.
Yeah, that's a bomb job. Sorry to hear that. You said less employees, same amount of work. Can you break that down? Like, what are the top couple maybe cuts or improvements that allowed for the same people to do more work? Because it's either one or the other, right? It's like either same people, more work, or it's less people, same work.
Some of the stuff, like, I wish I could just have like a x-ray of the shop and how much I've reconfigured it. Because like, you can see behind me the press. When we first got the press, it was actually, I set it up totally ass backwards, because I was so used to like printing on a manual, 50 shirts. It's a box of shirts. So I wasn't even really thinking about how product had to move. And after the first year of running things inefficiently, I spun the press around 180 degrees. I brought the dryer over, and I almost made like a clean and dirty designated area. Because like really when the press was spun around, we had to get through different small hallways and stuff with tons of shirts. And it was just so inefficient. So really now I've got a garage door where UPS drops everything off. We bin it. You know, stuff doesn't really travel too far. It goes on press, it goes out the door, and we're efficient there. I've also invested a lot in automation, so got an auto reclaim, which has really helped with just efficiencies in the dark room. So yeah, that's kind of some of the cores of what's going on, where, you know, like a day of reclaim is now a couple hours.
How do you validate the spend on it, right? An auto reclaim could be, I don't know, $50,000 to $100,000. Like, that's a pretty big investment. And for like, you know, just a couple, you know, a smaller shop or whatever, one or two autos, how does your brain think about making investment, whether it's like auto reclaim or coder or exposure? Like, yeah, how do you think about that stuff? Yeah.
So luckily for me, I think it was Screen Printing Mag had that cohort thing. And I was working with Blue Ridge Graphics. He was my mentor. And out of the blue, he reached out to me saying, "Hey, are you still looking for an auto reclaim? Because I've got a buddy selling a used one for $10,000. So for me, a lot of what I've bought has been used, or, you know, like the only thing new that I bought was the auto, the dryer, and the embroidery machine. But a lot of my stuff has been kind of scratch and dent. You know, you inherit other people's problems, but you learn a lot more quicker, I guess. Could be costly, could be a cost savings, but so yeah, I guess if the opportunity presents it and I can somehow bear it, that's my mindset.
Yeah, I mean, I always just like to think of like, okay, what would a human cost here? What would financing it cost? Will it actually eliminate a role or reduce, you know, the amount in there? I feel like in this next age of printing, like, that's where a lot of people are. Should we get a rotating heat press? You know, even like those passports, things like that. Because I do think sometimes when you over automate, you still need headcount, right? Like, you still need someone there. I think there was a big discussion on a rotating heat press, if it's going to be faster than just a good shuttle back and forth, because you're going to need a loader and an unloader. So there's like spend there. So I don't know. It's something like Scott and I talk about quite a bit. We got a text thread just on that rotating heat press.
What was the best piece of equipment that you bought to help automate?
If my eye, like, the thing I've learned through buying stuff used sometimes too, is there are little nuances that you don't, that no one tells you until it's too late. So I have an eye image, but I run Rock. So I like the eye image, because like, I eliminate all the waste of film and all that kind of stuff. But my Tri-Lock isn't the same, because Rock does their Tri-Lock on the other side. So it's not as efficient as it could be if I got like a wax or a laser. But I just like the quality improvement. It just seems to be a lot quicker to, and I think some of the layout of how the darkroom flows kind of contributes to how quick and efficient we can be.
And you're pretty like space constrained, John. Did you say you're on three different floors?
So I'm in the basement right now, and I don't know if you could see, but when the Rock arms go up, that actually goes between the floorboards and the building. And the light that tells you, you know, green, yellow, red, is actually hung upside down from the ceiling, because it wouldn't work otherwise.
I was going to say, is that cut out? Like, is the ceiling cut out to allow it to?
So, yeah, and I could see if. So the ceiling, like it was wild because when the press is decompressed and on that little pallet that it comes on, I could fit my pinky between that and the ceiling. So it just fit.
And then what happens? So like shirts come in on the main floor. Do you have to drop them down or like?
No. So basement actually has garage access. So I'm trying to get, you know, the bulk of the product to flow in and flow out of that same door. So like where I'm sitting, there's a desk for doing your pre-press prep, and then all the work in progress storage is behind me. The main floor is like the main entrance where people pick up the smaller orders. So, and then if like it's a big order, we have a little card that just says, hey, go to the basement, you can pick it up here. And then the second floor, which is technically the third floor if you count the basement, that has all the embroidery and fulfillment. But I'm hoping, well, it should be happening in the next month or so, but one of my tenants will be leaving and we're going to reconfigure the space again. So I'm only operating on two floors as opposed to three.
Interesting. So you own the building that you're in and you rent it out. Can you talk about that as a business? I think that's super, super smart of like you've hacked your real estate. Can you talk about how you've done that?
Yeah. So there's a separate holding company that holds the real estate, you know, loan and all that. And I have four tenants if you include us. But I've got a residential tenant. I've got two commercial tenants and then us. And then, you know, everyone like I love being an owner of a building because it's kind of like mailbox money. You don't really have to do anything other than make the building exist. So my mortgage is more than paid for. You know, it kind of helps me build a nest egg for when we got to do, like, if we got to put a roof or a deck or stuff like that. So,
that's how you run
lives there.
Yeah. Yeah. So it came with a full furnished apartment. So
effectively Graphic Hive is rent free more or less, right? You don't have a crazy expense for your rent and you're floating money in from your other tenants. When I look at shops that own their own real estate, I feel like this real estate hack is like the money. Like that is if shops can do that, I feel like that's the ultimate hack. I mean, doesn't it just make you like sleep better at night knowing like I don't really have rent?
Well, it's not so much the rent. It's just I like the fact that, you know, every shop has to upgrade the electric, has to do a lot of stuff. And when we left downtown, I don't know how many thousands of dollars I had to walk away from of improvements because you don't own the building.
Oh, got you. Because you had to make those improvements and now you can actually own the improvements and upgrade the building that you're in. Do you think you would ever grow out of that space and move into like another one? Or,
I mean, I feel like given the clientele that I attract and what's going on, I'm at a good size shop. If I were to move somewhere, I'd want like a big open warehouse where everything's on one floor because I get my steps in on any given day.
Is there's a freight elevator though to bring it up to the embroidery floor?
No, it's just us lugging, you know, hand trucks or boxes. Like luckily I think the way I've positioned it, embroidery is small, 20 pieces, you know, a box or two of stuff. It's not huge orders.
At our old shop, we were on a second floor and we basically had this old forklift that didn't move and it just acted like an elevator. And it would just drop in shirts from the top. And it was a cluster.
Prior to me being in this building used to be a woodworking space. And he had a permanently parked forklift with like trap doors that would open. So the idea is if he's refinishing a piano, he brings it in here, strips off all the paint and stuff in the basement, brings it to the second floor, does whatever repairs, brings it to the third floor. And there's like a spray booth to finish it. So.
Same concept, same brain. All right, John, you talked about like I run a good size shop. You've been at this for 15 years. Bruce and I talk a lot about like designing the business for yourself, figuring out like what your sweet spot is. 15 years in, do you feel like you have designed your company to run for you? Like what are you after now? You know, tell us about that a little bit.
Well, I think we were on that trajectory because I did have that business partner that was handling sales and all that kind of stuff. You know, Ripcord gets pulled out. I'm stuck here. So I feel like for me, I'm still trying to find that sales front of house stuff. So it's not all on me. But in terms of production, like, I don't necessarily have to worry too much about, you know, I feel like everyone has some of my standards for quality in place, and really, like, the production side runs pretty efficiently without too much interaction or oversight. It's just more the customer inquiries and finding, like, we get so much inbound that I haven't really had opportunity to really focus on doing the outbound. And I do want to kind of niche out and kind of focus on the clients that I like working with, but I just, it's been everything all at once. And I need to find time to focus, which it's one of the reasons why I joined Fabric too. If you want to do a little plug for that.
Shameless plug. Everyone should join Fabric. But yeah, talk about that. Like, what are the next things as you kind of phase into this next version of your business, right? What are the things that you're trying to unlock that will give you freedom? Is it profit? Is it just you not being dependent on you? Like, what are those things that you're trying to unlock that you're really focused on this year?
Some of my focus is really like playing around with AI and automations. I'm not a Printavo user, but I'm on Deco Network, and I did pay to get their API access. And right now I've got all my data from my orders funneling into a WordPress instance. And I'm trying to do some of the automated follow-up, because, like, I know you follow up with like 3 days later about promo products. I want to do that. I have a goal of getting 100 Google reviews, or like 88. So just any kind of automation of that, those little touches that I just do out of, if the conversation goes that way, I just want to happen automatically. So if I could free up time there, and then maybe I can kind of start focusing more on documenting some of my sales process before I onboard. So hopefully it's a better transition.
Are you doing other front of office automation stuff? Like, it sounds like you've really dialed the production side. Like, what about the customer side that, I mean, other than the couple things you're working on right now?
Well, I think my big struggle is, like, I feel like I'm definitely ADHD, so I am all over the place. And my biggest struggle from the sales side of things is, you know, I'll be doing something, phone will ring, I'll pick up the phone, I'll write whatever I need to write on the back of a receipt, an envelope, you know, a ticket from Sanmar, whatever. And then when it comes to actually doing stuff with that information, I'm like, what did I write that on? Where did I, you know? So I'm trying to really focus on keeping much more organized and disciplined.
That's why, you know, it's funny. We have learned, I think, you know, Stephen feels the same as this. It's just like, just not good at closing sales. Like, it gets so excited when the deal comes in, but a lot of times that's just the first 20%. And like you said, there's like the two other follow-ups, or like there's really writing the details, some of the back and forth. And that's why I've always just passed it off.
But my whole thing is, like, I'm like you, John, like, I'm not going to be good at that. So I'm not going to try and be good at that. And I'm going to learn to, like, get someone else to do it as quickly as possible. Cause, like, I think I mess up more orders now when I put in than anyone on my team. They'll be like, oh, that's Steven's order. It's messed up. I'm like, yep, that's my order.
Well, there are some orders that are just cut and dried. Here's my sizes. Here's my art. I love those. But what derails me is when I get a client that's just all over the place. Oh, we want beanie. We want this. We want that. And, like, you're spending hours kind of cultivating all that stuff. And it's rare that they ever jump on all that. They're just excited and hungry. And I don't know how to combat that.
That you dealing with, do you still deal with a lot of your clients? Like, are you basically, so you're in the weeds there?
Yeah.
Wow. And so, like, how do you think about, like, you know, profitability and actually just, like, being comfortable with everything that's coming in? I mean, you've been in business for 15 years, so something has got to work, right? But, like, are you in the numbers a lot, or do you just feel like the business makes good money and I can just kind of coast, or how do you think about that?
Really, I check the bank account, and, you know, I try to make sure I've got enough to cover payroll. Like, I'm definitely want to get better at the numbers. I hired someone to do the bookkeeping, but I want to get more proactive, like, knowing whether this month is good compared to, you know, past years or, you know, past months. But it's just, it's finding time to get things to stabilize and get back to normal so I can focus on more of the owner stuff.
Are you screwing around with any of the AI stuff to with help on the financial or sales stuff or anything like that?
So I don't necessarily use ChatGPT much for art, but I have been doing stuff like, if I have a client that's, I don't know, 50% of the way there, I might, this is a little one I've been enjoying. It's just, I'll just be like, hey, they want 50 shirts. Give me a breakdown, small to 2X. Or, you know, this is for beer drinkers, you know, just like little stuff like that, so that they can skew the results. And it's at least more of a baseline. And then the client will just go, oh, let's add five more here, so they have some input. Because I feel like finding sizes is half the battle with what we do.
Have you guys heard, I've been getting ads, now everyone's going to start getting ads for this, of like fixer.ai, F-Y-X-E-R.
I use it.
You do?
Yep.
Oh, you're okay. Yeah. So in the Fabric Slack, we were talking about this and you said you, and that's what I was fascinating about. Well, just share. Okay. So the ad is, you know, it says, hey, we handle your email for you, kind of like an assistant. And so you spend less time in email, which I think a lot of people want to, because it's just, it's almost addictive. And then you're always checking and you're always making decisions on it. And it's, yeah, FYXER.AI. Okay. How is it, John? Does it work? And what does it actually do?
I mean, I like it. I've tried a bunch of different AI tools. There's one that I really enjoyed, but it got shut down because of how Slack handles the data. The Fixer AI basically auto categorizes all your emails into like seven categories, like things to follow up on, informational, things like that. And then it'll actually, and you got to watch sometimes, because sometimes it, you know, AI hallucinates and makes up information, but it will kind of look at all my replies and draft a reply to what's going on in that email thread. And you have to coach it a little bit. Sometimes it'll make up a phone number or make a person's name that's not that person. But other than that, at least gets half the battle started. I've had some people like, oh, I like Comfort Colors, but I want this. And sometimes AI will suggest a product for them too, which is kind of neat. But you have to fact check it too. Yeah. Well, and sometimes like you have to read it, make sure you're not committing to something that doesn't exist. But sometimes, like, oh yeah, we could absolutely do that. I'm like, no, we can't. Let's.
So what do you mean by it drafts it too? Like, so it's like putting it in the draft. So all of your emails have draft responses to it and you're opening them up to hit send.
I can either edit it down or change some things or just hit send and we're good.
Even digitizers.
So I haven't trained it on that, but I love having fun with digitizers.
but it's a time saver, because part of it is, like, when I had the part-time assistant, she would be able to do the responses and I trusted her with a certain level, like up to, oh, okay, here's the starred ones because those need my attention. The rest of them, I want you to, like, either, you know, funnel it into bill pay or funnel it, like, you know, send it to an account manager or send it to whatever. And that I felt like helped me save time. So I only needed to look at a certain amount of emails at the end of the day. Where's, do you think, is the time savings? It's the drafting of the email.
I think so. Cause sometimes there are like those book emails where they're asking for everything. And if I can have half the email drafted and then just enter my own stuff or put my links to my Deco Network orders in the draft, it's a huge time save. And it's even, and like, I think the thing is, sometimes, cause I'm so busy, my emails tend to be very short. So I like the fact that they're a little more massagey, salesy, you know, without me having to create that stuff.
There's another time saver tool I'd like to talk about, Bruce. I was pitching this to you. I don't know if you've downloaded it yet. It's called Opal. OPAL, I think is what it is. So Bruce and I, we tried to stay off certain apps. Like, can we just stay off Instagram for a week? And Bruce is really good about it. He can just delete it and then he redownloads it. And so, like, I can only send Bruce memes and stuff like when I know his Instagram is live. So basically like Monday through Thursday. But there's there's this tool called Opal. And what's really, really cool about it is you can set different times of the day to not allow you to go on certain apps. And there's a desktop version. I think it's like $8 a month. And so I set from like 9 to 5, like no Instagram, no LinkedIn, no TikTok. And it, like, if I open up the app and I try to open it, it'll be like, we're sorry. Like, you know, it says, it'll give me like something that says, sorry, you can't open up Instagram. And it'll give me like a poem. To like go back to work. I am 3 days into it. I haven't opened up social apps during the day. Night and day. It's been incredible.
I have a similar tool. It's called Block. It has.
Ooh, you've got Block.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. Two-way. Explain how that works.
We're going down the rabbit hole. Let's do it.
So it's got a card with an NFID reader, and you can only unblock your phone with this card. So you can set it to do routines. You can block certain apps. And basically, if I try to open Instagram until I tap this card to unlock it, it won't let you do anything. And there's like a whole community, and it logs how long you've been blocked and stuff like that. So it's kind of neat. Really, I feel like I waste a lot of time on social media, and I need to just not have it be a thing for a couple hours in the morning, at least.
I mean, even like at night, like I put like from 8:30 to 11 p.m. is like wind down. It's like, don't let me open these apps up, because you'll just waste so much time. And it's cool as you can put like, you know, times I want to work out, or times I like want my mornings, or like I want to be in laser focus mode right now. Bruce, you haven't bought in yet.
I think I'll try it. But yeah, I've just deleted the apps, because some of the apps are actually, it's like the social apps that are so distracting time wise are really, really bad if you use them in Safari. So Instagram, for example, if you don't have the app and alone in Safari, you look at it for a couple of seconds and it's just such a bad experience. You just end up leaving.
Oh, so you'll actually go to the web browser.
Yeah, yeah. I'm allowed to check it on the web browser, but like it's so awful. You check it once, maybe twice a day for like a minute. And you don't get hooked in. Like all the algorithms and things that it's picking up from your phone and what you say and who you're texting to other people and all that stuff isn't there. So it's just not that much of a hook as it is when it's on your computer. But yeah, I mean, whatever works for... I download it back sometimes, but
I'll text him when I see something cool on Instagram, because I'm like, this dumbass ain't gonna look at this. And I'm like, no, you need to see this.
It is crazy how much time, yeah, just gets wasted away. Like at, you know, one thing I've tried is I bought this. So there's two things. One, I put my phone and I try to have it. So when you turn your phone sideways, it like turns into like an alarm clock looking thing, and you can set a timer. And so I'll say, okay, I literally have an hour. I have to get this done. And so I'm kind of racing against that hour, and that helps me. And then I also bought this like little tray of tasks. So just paper, you know, I'm just writing down, okay, what is the one thing I really got to get done? And if there's a couple others, write that under. And so I just see that over and over. That tries to help. I've also found not using a larger monitor helps. I feel like the more screen space, the more distractions as well. So just the laptop screen. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like some of those things, if you could squeak out another hour of just more productivity within, you know, before 5 or 4 o'clock and then just leave, that's a big, way better win than trying to sit around, like trying to spend 2 hours and you're still sitting there at 7, 8 o'clock, and you know, you probably are maybe 40% efficient.
Well, before Block, I went crazy extreme and it was almost like laughable, but I had one of those like lock your phone in a lockbox. No, it was like a lockbox.
I have a lockbox, a little white one with the timer on it.
Well, yeah, it has a timer and you can unswipe it so you can still take calls, but it was not a good thing.
That is wild. I love those for restaurants. I wish more restaurants had like a basket where it's like, all right, everybody put your phone in.
It's like the brewery like carved out the bottom part of a pint where the only way it would sit is if you set it on your phone.
There should be a restaurant called like Unplugged, where if you want to be present, you can just put your phone in there at the door and have a great time.
Speaking of AI stuff, the last one, I just wanted to share this. I don't know if John, you've seen this too. ChatGPT released something called agents. And this is a word that's been used, like, you know, AI agents and stuff all over the place. But basically what it does is on the $20 a month plan, you click the little plus thing. And then you select agent mode. Basically, what it does is you can have it do certain tasks for you on the internet. So my immediate thing was, okay, here's a Printavo invoice here, and let's log into SNS, Steven's SNS, and let's purchase the goods. And I didn't say buy it though. I just said add it to the cart. So, you know, and then the second instruction I said, double check the items that are in the cart to the ones that are on the invoice. And if something's missing, let me know in the bottom. Let me know at the bottom. Oh, and sorry, the last one I remember was, you know, search for the closest warehouse based on my zip code of this. So it did it. It literally, what it does is it opens up this little browser in there and it starts going through and do it. Now, it probably needs better prompt instructions because it took 30 minutes to do an order of like 15 items, 20 items, but still it completed it. And then I double checked it and I was like, wow, that is so cool. Again, simple order, easy, one website, but the potential there was pretty neat.
So you're saying ChatGPT is now DGI?
So Bruce, was that too soon? Wait, Bruce, is it Sandmar or SNS that it worked? Because I thought we had tried it on SNS.
SNS. I did not test on Sandmar.
Bruce, do you have your siren? So this is a message that Bruce does not watch other podcasts that he's not on when we have guests. But the last episode was Matt Marcotte and I going through AI agents for a full hour and talking about exactly what to do with AI agents.
All right, never mind.
So Bruce, how was your vacation? Was it good? Was it good? No. You can't delete it now. You can't delete it now. Oh, sorry. I just had to do that. You set me up so good. You could have at least looked at the freaking title.
I was about 10 minutes in. Okay. I got one more tool then. I don't think you covered this one. All right. So one of the concerns, a lot of people's sales is obviously very inbound driven, right? Probably 98%. John, you just talked about that. You know, you get a lot. That's usually just good SEO. You're based in the area. People search for shirts. Google's localizing it. Promotional products, whatever, you guys pop up. The concern and that some people are seeing is a decrease in volume of folks finding businesses through Google directly and others finding businesses through ChatGPT. And so, or like Gemini or whatever the other AI tools are. And so one cool tool that is at sort of like the Google Analytics of AI search is called otterly.ai. So it's otterly.ai. And what it's doing is it's showing your sort of domain and where you rank in AI results and what people are using to prompt to find you. And so this has been kind of interesting as the usage of this grows. I don't know. I mean, personally, I probably am like 80% asking this thing for recommendations and everything instead of general Google, but yeah, kind of neat tool. And I think it's going to be more prevalent over time.
It's crazy to see how fast AI is iterating. Like Google just dropped Nano Banana last week. And it's just, I mean, it's crazy that like they are coming out with newer versions faster than we can even learn the last one. John, how do you stay in tune with everything in the AI world? Matt Marcotte or?
I just play around with it. I try to like, it's funny how we talked about blocking Instagram and stuff, but I feel like I do get little nuggets here and there or interesting little, like depends on who you follow or what shows up in your algorithm.
What about your employees? Do you get any feedback of like anti or pro?
I feel like I've got a lot of designers that are anti, but I actually started working with, and I think the big thing is I always like, how we talked about, I hired someone new. I put in the interview, like, what's your thoughts on AI? Just to see how they take it or what they're using it for. And I think if they're open, because like I don't care necessarily what you use it for. Just as long as you're open to it, because it's here. It's not like the toothpaste is out of the toothpaste tube. You should embrace it. Otherwise, people are going to surpass you. So some people are anti because of the artist, you know, trueness and the idea of like it's ripping off other artists. But there are some people that, you know, it's their lifeblood. I feel like I'm the extreme and there's probably a middle ground of a couple people that are doing things with it. But we probably need to start in the on hands meeting talking about how can we use AI for us? Because I like that idea of SNS ordering, because, you know, when we lost DGI, that was kind of a sucker punch to my purchasing person. So
I came out on Monday and said to my team, we have an all hands once a month. And part of my frustration is like, I'm very pro AI. I want to find every opportunity to use it with integrity and obviously like still continuing to be original, but there's so many different use cases in the business. And I just came out and said, like, we're going to be an AI driven company. We're going to be thinking about it. We're going to be using it. And if that's not for you, then this company isn't for you. And if you have different viewpoints, you can resign and no hard feelings. And so I just kind of came out with it because I just wanted everyone to know like what my thoughts are on it. And I was like, you don't have to fight me. I'm not going to argue with you. But if this isn't the direction that you want to go in, this job isn't for you. No one has resigned yet. But I did get a lot of awesome messages after being like, I'm interested. Check this out. I'm like, thank you. Bruce, have you guys come out and said anything about like how we're going to use it or anything at Printavo?
There's been a lot of pushing. And I'm kind of surprised how many, some departments have definitely leaned into it because it makes their job immediately easier, like marketing or sales. It's like, it helps around the corners. You know, it's not automating everything, but it's doing little tidbits that help like create this outline or, you know, this caption or whatever. I think engineering, we've had some, you know, they, oddly enough, I would have thought engineering would have been more forward on it, but they're slowly working into it. They actually, one idea that they had is they did a hackathon. And so they built some internal AI tooling. That was really cool to see. So slow to adopt. I think there's definitely a camp that's either very cautious or tired of hearing about it. And that's, to your point, I think like get on the bandwagon or not. I mean, it reminds me of like early internet or early like Microsoft Suite days. It's like, look, like we're using Excel now. We're not writing this on the whiteboard or on paper anymore. So if you're not using it, then I'm not doing that. So, but I think when people start to see some of the, or like maybe it's a switch of like glass half empty, glass half full thought. And like when people can get a little bit of a glimmer as to how it specifically helps them. For example, we created a company account. People could sign up and add themselves to it and start using it. And, you know, start transferring some of your Google searches to this and see what you get. You could do both, but you know.
Yeah. If you pay for Google Business, you get Gemini and like the nice one. Yeah, it was interesting. I'll share this. Like I was talking to my business partner, Jed. He is 65 years old and he's an incredible artist, digitizer, like started with like Corel One. And he's like, do you guys know where clip art came from? And it's like, no, we're not talking about Microsoft Word clip art. We're talking about books that we would buy of paper that we would actually cut pieces of art out, use an enlarger and actually like put it onto a screen. And, you know, you're complaining about like, he's like, that is how we used to do it. And before that, we would hand draw it. And so like, if you use the trace tool in AI, like in Adobe Illustrator, like you're no different than we were doing way back in the day. And so if you're not keen on using artificial intelligence, like don't use your Adobe Illustrator then, because it's all just robotic and machined and, you know, one way or the other, like we're using our computers. So it's just interesting that he made that analogy from like 25, 30 years ago.
And I think it generationally for many folks, this is maybe the first shift in how they work that's significant. Like I think, you know, maybe if you're mid 30s or 40s, there was the shift like when you were in school of like starting using a computer and then like internet, you know, I remember in like junior high and it's like, oh shit, you kind of need to like, this is a different way. Like it's, you don't need to know the Dewey Decimal System in the library way. Like you gotta figure this way out and you gotta shift and adapt to it. But this is the first big shift for a lot of the people that work with us in terms
you
of
ask, how they work. Ask Jeeves.com.
Dude, that was a good one. The forums, Yahoo forums and t-shirt forums. And anyway, all right, John, thanks for being able to share so much. Thanks for being a part of Fabrics. Awesome that you hear that, that you're joining it a bunch. If people can, if they want to reach out, I'm sure, you know, can they, do you have Instagram or email that they can shoot you in the note at?
Yeah. So, Instagram's at the Graphic Hive or I'm at JYogi3. Either one works. And then John at the Graphic Hive for email.
Sweet. He'll have to use the block card to answer you on DMs, but
yeah, make it a little bit of, or you make it into the fixer filter and end up, may end up in the newsletter section. All right, print hustlers, thank you guys for joining us on this episode of Printable Print Hustlers podcast. We'll see you in the next week's episode. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.